welcome everyone to episode 7 of the Casino USA's podcast. Your host again today is Coach Fab, and today's episode is called Just the Facts. But before we begin, I want to wish all our listeners a happy Thanksgiving. But buckle your seatbelts and we'll move into part one of today's podcast. I have a very big challenge for all of us who gamble. If you are courageous, please share your answers with one another. And this is a test from Gamblers Anonymous to try to decide if you or I or others in the room are a compulsive gambler. So my challenge to all of our listeners is to be honest in your answers. There's 20 questions, and I'm going to review these with you and share my answers with you as well. Question number one, did you ever lose time from work or school due to gambling? Well, for me, that's a quick answer, no. Number two, has gambling ever made your home life unhappy? Yeah, I think maybe it has, and only a couple times, but only because I was unhappy because I didn't do well at gambling, and I had to learn to get past that feeling, and it kind of destroyed the family atmosphere at home because I was unhappy. Question number three, did gambling affect your reputation? Well, my immediate answer is no, but I did have to take a book. The book I wrote was called Craps Across America. I had to take it out of publication because of a position I took with a nonprofit organization, and they did not want me to be seen as a gambler. So in a sense, I had a reputation of being a recreational gambler, and it maybe was affected in a negative way in some people's eyes. Have you ever felt remorse after gambling? I may have felt remorse after gambling, not because I lost money, but because I was not satisfied with how I gambled, the decisions that I made. So, but in the spirit of the question, I would say no, I've never felt remorse because of gambling. Question five, did you ever gamble to get money with which you planned to pay debts or otherwise solve financial difficulties? I never really had that pie in the sky attitude about gambling. I wasn't gambling to make money to pay my debts. But, like most people, I participate in the state lotteries and the national lotteries, the Powerball, with thinking that, oh boy, it would make life a lot nicer. And I did have a cousin through marriage that won $100,000 in a Pennsylvania ticket purchase. So I'm sure he doesn't regret buying it. But no, my intention when I gamble is not to make money that I need to pay my debts. Question six, did gambling cause a decrease in your ambition or efficiency? And that's a quick no for me. Seven, after losing, did you ever feel that you should return as soon as possible and win back your losses? I would say no. After I lose, I'm not in a rush to get back to gambling. But again, I journalize and I write down ideas, kind of like re-examine what I did, looking for a better approach. After a win, did you have a strong urge to return and win more? Again, in my case, I would say no. In fact, I got very conservative after a lot of big wins because I didn't want to give back the money. Did you ever gamble until your last dollar was gone? I've sometimes gone beyond my loss limit, and sometimes with regret, but I never gambled until I was flat broke. No, I've never done that. Did you ever borrow to finance your gambling? And I've never done that. I have a gambling account, and my wife's well aware of the money in there, but there are so many people, I see it. I mean, I see it at the windows, the cashier windows, that are drawing on credit cards. And that's borrowing money to gamble, and that's just a sad thing. Question 11, have you ever sold anything to finance gambling? And again, in my case, that's a very quick no. Question 12, were you reluctant to use gambling money for normal expenditures? And I say no. I did raid my gambling account to buy my grandson a used car, but that was a choice that I made, and I wasn't reluctant to do it. Did gambling ever make you careless about your own financial welfare or that of your family's? And for me, that's another quick no. Question 14, did you ever gamble longer than you had planned? And I have to say, that's a yes in my case. And it's because I'm not going to leave a red hot table. Wasn't that long ago, my wife and I checked into the Excalibur. We had a comped room there, and she went up to the room rather early. She had a big plan for the next day, and I went to the craps table, and it just turned red hot, and I gambled all night. I came up as she was waking up, and she just said, "Well, I hope you won." I said, I did. And I spent half the day in the shade at the swimming pool sleeping while she was enjoying the sun. But that was a positive result, you know, and I gambled much longer than I had planned. Question 15. Have you ever gambled to escape worry, trouble, boredom, loneliness, grief, or loss? And thinking about that question, I would say, yeah, there are times, you know, I gambled because I wanted some excitement. You know, maybe the routine of the work life was a little bit boring, and I was looking forward to spending some time in a casino to kind of get, you know, that adrenaline feeling. And I know that's not good to seek that out, but I think I'd have to answer 15 as a yes. 16, have you ever committed or considered committing an illegal act to finance gambling? No, I haven't. I just told a story in the last podcast, though, of somebody who had some success in gambling and then couldn't get it again and embezzled money. This is a Pittsburgh story. Just a few weeks ago, the man was sentenced to 3 years in prison. So there are people out there that do it. 17. Did gambling cause you to have difficulty in sleeping? For me, that's a no. 18. Do arguments, disappointments, or frustrations create within you an urge to gamble? Well, not to my conscious mind. No, I don't think so. I think I gamble sometimes out of boredom, but not out of frustration. 19. Did you ever have an urge to celebrate any good fortune by a few hours of gambling? And again, for me, no. No, I don't. If I have, you know, a really good day, I don't say, "Hey, let's go to the casino." It doesn't work that way for me. But I know some people do. And finally, such a serious question, have you ever considered self-destruction or suicide as a result of your gambling? And, you know, in Las Vegas particularly, I'm sure it's true everywhere, but there are those who take their own lives because of gambling. I don't know how much of a myth it is and how much reality there is in it, but they talk about people jumping out of the parking garages in Las Vegas. I do know someone who did embezzle money, a considerable amount of money, and gambled it away in Las Vegas and then just committed suicide in a Las Vegas hotel. And that person was associated with one of the jobs I had. I didn't know him real well, but I knew who he was, and everybody knew he took the money and left and ended up committing suicide in Las Vegas. And again, these questions come from the organization called Gamblers Anonymous. And, you know, of these 20 questions, if you have, say, five questions that you've answered and you said yes to, you know, you might have sort of a mild gambling problem. But if you go beyond five, you know, six, seven, eight, nine, if you get almost half of these questions with a yes, then I think you need to seek professional help and you need to come clean with this compulsion to gamble. And I don't think this is a downer. I just think there's dangers in so many hobbies that people take. You know, there's dangers in downhill skiing. There's obviously dangers in boating. There's dangers in, you know, running through the woods alone. I know a lot of runners, it's a dangerous thing. They've been mugged in the woods. But in enjoying casino culture and recreational gambling, you can go too far. And I think it's just important for me as someone who is promoting recreational gaming to make sure that people just don't go beyond the norm. And so in every episode, I try to present another side of gambling that you have to be careful with it. And it can be very destructive. For me, it's also a source of fun and enjoyment and relaxation. And it's a fascinating hobby. And I've avoided getting jaded with walking away from it as I walked away from many other hobbies that I've had in my life. So please use these questions as a source to discuss some of these things. And maybe you see something in this in your friend, you know, and you can mention it to him. Hey, you know, Jimmy or Joan, whatever it might be, you know, are you gambling too much? You know, do you want to talk about it? Those kind of things. Be helpful. Be a buddy. Be concerned. We're going to move on to part two of today's podcast. And we're going to talk about the taxes that casinos pay. And just thinking about, there's 40 states with casinos. Like, what's the first state, the second state, the third state? Like, what's happening in our country? How much is legalized gambling bringing in? And what kind of good is it doing? So let's prepare for that second segment of today's episode. You know, if I said, like, which state generated the most tax revenue, I'm sure a lot of people would say, well, it has to be Nevada. Well, they're up there. There's 271 casinos in Nevada, and they generated $889.1 million in tax revenue. And I got that figure from the American Gaming Association's annual survey of the casino industry in the United States. So $889, rounding it down, million in tax revenue last year. 271 casinos. But they're not first. Let's talk about my own state, Pennsylvania. There's 12 casinos, only 12 casinos in the Keystone State. And these 12 casinos paid $1.38 billion last year in taxes. You know, just rounding it down a little bit, that's $500 million more than what Nevada taxes, what they paid. And so, you know, like, what's the difference? Like, how can 271 casinos pay less in tax than 12 casinos in Pennsylvania? And simply put, Pennsylvania taxes a living hell out of its casinos. I don't know how else to put it. In Pennsylvania, slot machines are taxed at a 55% rate and table games at a 16% rate. And in Pennsylvania, tax revenue goes toward property tax relief, economic development, tourism, and some of these taxes have been used to help the struggling horse racing industry in the state. And some of the funds help local governments. Nevada casinos brought in $11 billion in revenue, and Pennsylvania's brought in just over $3 billion in revenue. But Pennsylvania's paid much more. So think about that. So Nevada has four times the gross revenues, but PA pulls in more than any other of the 40 states with casinos because of the high taxes. Despite the high taxes, gaming companies in Pennsylvania still want to expand. And they want to expand not just in Pennsylvania, but on the East Coast. This December, I think it's very early December, MGM Resorts International opening a casino just outside of Washington, D.C. And Wynn Resorts plans an opening in the Boston Harbor waterfront. I think that's along the Mystic River. And that's planned for 2019. In Michigan, the city of Detroit took in $311 million in gaming tax from its three land-based casinos. And the state, not only the city of Detroit, but the state of Michigan also taxed these casinos. So, you know, in the end, what does this mean to you and me? For one thing, casino taxes, and I would guess in all 40 states, are becoming increasingly important to the state and municipal budgets. And for another, and this is a positive thing, I expect more offers and comps to arrive in my mailbox because of casino saturation. Because casinos today are forced to give out more comps to attract players. You know, when I see these figures, it's really hard for me to understand why 10 states in the United States do not have legalized gambling. There may not be gold in the hills anymore, but there's a ton of tax revenue from casinos. So Pennsylvania leads all states in gaming taxes collected. Nevada is second, but there are states closing in on Nevada, and one of those would be New York. Presently, Nevada, New Jersey, and Delaware are the only three states with any form of legalized online gambling. So online gambling, legal online gambling, Nevada, New Jersey, and Delaware. Nevada allows online gambling only for poker. And as I am quite aware, the casino lobby in Pennsylvania continues to push for online gambling also. Statewide in Pennsylvania last week, slot machine players lost $43 million. And the average machine payout across the state was 90% of what they took in. So $90 approximately for every $100 played. And these figures, I think, show you how many people are playing slot machines. When comparing the four southwestern Pennsylvania casinos, and I live in the southwestern part of Pennsylvania, the Rivers, the Meadows, Presque Isle up in Erie, and the Lady Luck Casino at Nemacolin, of those four, the Meadows had the highest return for players last week, and they were just over 90% of the money played was given back. And this information comes from Mark Grutz, and he's becoming such a solid gaming columnist for the Tribune Review. Okay, so we've been talking about some factual things, and let's get back to gambling. I'm going to talk a little bit about how to hedge bet the come-out roll in craps. I don't know how many people realize, but you know, this is emulation to thousands of rolls. Those math nerds can confirm this. About 30%, I'm going to just keep saying a third, about one-third, nearly one-third of all come-out rolls end with a 7-11 or a 2-3-12. So in other words, the game is resolved on the come-out roll. And as a craps player, you have to make a decision. If you want to participate in that in any other way than just playing the pass line, or the don't pass, because if you do, you can take advantage of some opportunities. Now, you know, if we were talking about 10,000 rolls, I would say, yeah, you know, the math is certainly against anyone over that kind of a thing where, you know, you're better off just to play the don't pass or the pass line and don't try to hedge it. But just in my own experience, and have my own craps table at home, you know, I do this so often, I'll just go through a number of dice rolls and see what math is. And I can tell you that when we're talking about 20, 30, 40 rolls, and that might be doing a crapshoot like the come-out rolls, I don't think you'll get more than 40 unless you're there a long, long time. Dice can do anything. I mean, I don't think they reflect necessarily the what I call the infinity math, you know, the long-term math of the game. And you can choose not to participate in the come out and just start placing numbers after the come out or making come bets after the come out. But you can also just put money on both the don't pass and the pass line. And then once the point is established, you can pick up the don't pass if you're a pass line player. I mean, that's something that if you don't want to be involved in one third of the, you know, opportunities to make money. But what I like to do is, let me start from the pass line, because I talk about the don't pass so much. I like to hedge the pass line bet because I'm looking for opportunities with the craps numbers, because the odds are just so great. You know, for example, a 2 or a 12 is 30-1, and a 3 is 15-1. So I'm going to use $15. So $15 on the pass line, $6 on three-way craps. $20 on the pass line, $6 on three-way craps. $25 on the pass line, $6 on three-way craps. And that's a hedge. And actually, when the dice are rolled, I'm rooting for the craps numbers to come up because of the opportunity that I have. So if I have $25 and a 3 is rolled, you know, I'm going to come up with a dollar. If a 7 or an 11 is rolled, I'm going to still win $19. But if a 12 or a deuce is rolled, you know, snake eyes, then that's a $50 winner. Yeah, actually, it's $56 that I'll be paid. And then, you know, she subtract my $25 loss. And so what I'll probably do is parlay that. I'm press it another $6, hoping that I can get a streak going. And that's paid off for me. And I would argue that I've done better that way than just putting $15 on the pass line and pow, losing it to a craps number. I don't like any craps. I like to go three-way craps. Just the odds are just better in terms of the payout. Something to think about. Another hedge from the dunk pass line, you know, you're worried about the 7 and 11, and if you want to hedge the dunk pass line, you can obviously hop the 7s with a $2 yo. You know, that's something you could do. But one of the best ways for me to hedge the dome pass line is to lay the 4 for $40. Now, if a 7 comes up, I'll get $20. So I'll win $20. But what about a yo number? So if I lay the 4 for $40 and a 7 doesn't come up, then I will wait one roll before I take that lay bet down. I'll take the lay bet down after one roll. Sometimes people say you should leave it up, and you know, I can argue that's maybe not a bad thing to do, but that's just how I play. And I'll also, on that don't pass hedge, I'll go with a $2 yo as well to cover the 11. So I know I'm going to lose if a 4 comes up, but I'll also hop the 4 for $2, and that's a $60 win on that. So I have a $2 yo and a $2 hop bet on the 4. That's $4 there, and then I laid the 4 for a 7. Sounds complicated, but it's worked for me well, and I kind of root for someone to throw a hard 4 on the come up. It's just that I just don't see that many 4s thrown on come out rolls. And of course, if a 4 is thrown, I'm going to lose the $40. But understand that I still have money on the dome pass. So even though I lost that $40, they still have to beat me on the dome pass. So I'll probably put odds on my dome pass bet so that I can get that $40 back. So those are just, I'm going to talk about these again, but those are common ways that I use, common in that I think it's very easy to do, for me to hedge the pass line or for me to hedge the dome pass line. And again, with nearly one-third of the decisions being made on the come-out roll, I want to turn that one-third of the craps game to work in my favor. And although the math is against me, I'm going to continue to make the case with my listeners, it's not against me for a few rolls. There's just no determination. You know, for example, smart players would tell you that betting for the 7 to come up, you know, on any one single bet is one of the worst bets in craps. Well, 7 is the most likely number to come up. So, like, that statement kind of doesn't make sense if you think about infinity math. So that's why I feel secure in hopping the 7s, you know, hopping the reds, I should say, and making a $2 yo bet or laying the 4 to cover the 7 and hopping the 4 $2 yo bet to cover the don't pass line. So just reconsider your thinking with the come out roll. And again, if you don't want to participate in that come out roll, you can wait till after the come out to just place numbers or even go with a put bet for that matter, you know, and that would be something you could do. Or you can hedge the way I do. And if you just play it your way in the short term, I think I'm going to win more money than you. In other words, if you just bet straight pass line with no hedge or straight don't pass with no hedge, I think in most sessions, I'm going to win more money than you. And you can't convince me of the math working against me because, again, it's my mantra that infinity math in craps has little value with just a few rolls. And I think another reason I say this is I have a craps table in my game room. And so every time I pass that game room, I'm rolling some dice. And I just don't see the infinity math working when someone rolls 10, 12, 15 times. I just don't see it working. And as we close out today, I want to ask you to keep those emails coming. We really enjoy discussing your emails. Appreciate it. It gives us a sense of direction for our podcast. And also, again, we wish all of our listeners happy Thanksgiving.